The resurrection of Jesus Christ is actually the pinnacle of the Christian faith. For if Jesus is not risen from the dead, then Christianity is a wipeout, and Christianity is then truly false. You know, we've been walking through the 12 points on Christianity. We dealt with two of them last week on the subject of miracles, where we made a case of miracles. But one of the greatest miracles of all is the resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth. If Jesus is not risen from the dead, then our faith is empty and we're still in our sins. Join us on the Let's Get Real podcast as we talk about this some more. Welcome to the Let's Get Real podcast with Rob Lindberg. We are going to talk about the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, well, he rose spiritually from the dead. Well, if he rose spiritually from the dead, he could have made the irrefutable claim that he could have said something like this: you kill me, but I'll rise spiritually from the dead. Now, you know, nobody can refute that by any stretch of the imagination. But what if he did declare himself to be risen from the dead by prophesying that he was going to rise from the dead? In John chapter 2, we see this, where he has just gotten finished cleansing the temple. And in John chapter 2, verses 18, he says, "You tear down this temple, in 3 days I'll raise it up." And the Jews questioned him. They said, "You say that you're going to raise this up in 3 days when it took us 46 years to build the temple." Now, that's a loose paraphrase of the summation of that text right there. But Jesus said this. He said, "You tear down this temple, in 3 days I'll raise it up." The Jews therefore said, "It took us 46 years to build this temple. You say you're going to raise it in three." And then it says in verse 21, but he was speaking of the temple of his body. Since we know that God exists, and we also know that miracles are possible, and examining the five lines of evidence that even the most critical scholars will grant, when a good historical method is used, folks, you and I can see that the resurrection best accounts for all of the pieces of the puzzle without forcing them to fit. Hence, Jesus' claim of divinity were miraculously validated. Now, I'm going to talk to you about the resurrection, and we're going to talk about it from the perspective not of how can somebody be raised from the dead, but whether or not Jesus was actually risen from the dead. And you know, with regards to this whole issue, you know, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. And it's beyond reasonable doubt that the New Testament writers, they recorded what they saw. You know, we have seen that Jesus claimed to be God, and the earliest followers believed that he was God. But do we have reason to believe that his claims were true? Well, if the writers were eyewitness testimonies, then I think the case for the resurrection is at least beginning to become validated. You know, if we were to recall that a miracle is God's fingerprint to confirm a message, the New Testament attributes of many miracles to Jesus, but one stands above the rest, and that's namely the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15 that Christianity certainly hinges on the resurrection, and we have good reason to believe that it occurred. So investigating the resurrection involves doing good history by explaining the key pieces of evidence, the historical puzzle pieces, if you will, in the best way possible with the New Testament. But not only that, with the fewest unevidenced assumptions, and most critical scholars will grant five key pieces, which when put together, along with our background knowledge of God's existence, they'll show the resurrection is a historical fact. Now, what I want to do is I want to deal with this using an acronym. And that acronym is FACTS, F-A-C-T-S. And you can write that down in your notebooks as an acronym that will present the five pieces of the puzzle, if you will. The first piece is the fatal cross. The second one is an abandoned tomb. A third one is conversion of the disciples. And then transformation of James. And then Saul became Paul. But before we do that, let me deal with a couple few theories, I guess you could say, that need to be addressed before we get into the facts of the resurrection. You know, again, beyond a reasonable doubt, the New Testament writers recorded what they did see. And the minimal consensus of scholars is that the disciples believe that Jesus rose from the dead. Now, I know that skeptics will claim, and they do, they claim, and all they are just claims, nothing to be fearful of, that they were deceived. Now, what I want to do in this part here is just present to you a few theories before we get to the facts, okay? First off is this whole idea of whether or not they were hallucinating, you know, the hallucination theory. It is beyond reason that 500 people would see the same hallucination over a 40-day period. And how can a physical touch be an hallucination? Also, the Roman authorities would have displayed a dead body to stop the claims of any sightings. They couldn't use that. Why? Because the tomb was empty. Now, let me fill in some pieces of this here for you. It's recorded for us in Luke 24 and John chapter 20 that the disciples eyewitnessed Jesus risen from the dead. Jesus in Luke 24, verses 37, 36, 40 to 40, somewhere in there, he says, "See my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Touch me and see. A spirit does not have flesh and bones, as you see that I have." And then in John chapter 20, where you read that he appeared to the apostle Thomas, Thomas was requested by Jesus to reach here, put your finger in the holes in the wrist, and put your hand in my side. Be not unbelieving, but believing. And Thomas made a declaration of saying, "My Lord and my God," which wasn't an "Oh my Lord, oh my God" type exclamation, but it was an act of declaration of Jesus' deity, an act of worship on the part of Thomas. Well, okay, maybe Jesus did rise, or maybe he didn't die, but if he didn't die, maybe they went to the wrong tomb. That is another one. Many people today knew the tomb of the location of where Jesus was buried, and they would have checked to make sure that it was not a mistake as far as going to the wrong tomb. Also, this does not explain the sightings. And of course, you have the Jesus Seminar with John Dominic Crossan and Marcus Borg, who were notorious for going and saying that Jesus swooned, which means it's an apparent death. The professional Roman executioners knew Jesus was dead. Also, the procurator Pilate double-checked Jesus' death before he released the body to Joseph of Arimathea. And if Jesus was not dead when they put the body in the tomb, then he would have bled to death very quickly. Now, also, if you look at the account of the Gospels, you would see from your reading that they were going to go and break the legs because it was approaching the Passover, and they wanted to hasten the death of the ones that were crucified with Jesus on crosses on each side of them. So they were going to break the legs. When they got to Jesus, they used a spear and they pierced it through his pericardium, where blood and water came out. And, of course, if you want to see a good movie on that, look at the movie Risen by Joseph Fiennes, which is a great movie to share with your skeptic, your friends that are skeptics, because that really gives a good depiction of what ancient Rome was like, or ancient Jerusalem under Rome, under the Roman Empire was like. So hallucinations don't work. Going to the wrong tomb doesn't work. The swoon theory does not work. Maybe the disciples stole the body. Yeah, that might work, right? Well, that doesn't work either, because they would have been having a difficult time getting past the guards. In fact, the disciples ran and hid because they were afraid that they would be put on crosses as well. Also, it wouldn't explain the sightings of Jesus being risen from the dead. Well, maybe if that's not the case, then maybe a substitute took Jesus' place on the cross. And this is a popular Muslim view. Muslims claim that Jesus only appeared to be on the cross. Someone took his place. In the Quran, it talks about this in Surah 4, Ayahs 157 to 158. But there is no evidence for this claim. How would John, who was the closest friend of Jesus and Jesus' mother, not recognize Jesus? Also, this would not explain the empty tomb nor the sightings. And then also, maybe the disciples' faith led them to believing that in the resurrection. You know, maybe Jesus so told them that he was going to get crucified, he's going to get handed over to sinful men, going up to Jerusalem, and he's going to be beaten, and he's going to be killed 3 days later. You know, maybe they didn't get their facts straight. Maybe the disciples' faith led them to believing in the resurrection. Well, the sequence was opposite. Many did not believe in the resurrection until after the resurrection actually happened. And then the last one is the fact of New Testament writers copy pagan resurrection myths. You know, like Dionysius or Mithras or some of the others, Quetzalcoatl or, you know, others that are popular in the movie Zeitgeist, which is a joke. That's right, I said the movie Zeitgeist is a joke. It was done by four people using multiple pseudonyms and all to go and make it sound like it was scholarly, but it wasn't. But New Testament writers did not copy pagan resurrection myths. And of course, the myths themselves are about reincarnation into different bodies and not about resurrection. A reincarnation is a past life being rebirthed into a present life. In order to get it right in this life, that is not. I'll have another episode on the difference between resuscitation, resurrection, and reincarnation at a later time. But the New Testament writing is full of facts and eyewitness testimony, and the style is not mythological with fictional characters. Instead, there are real people supported by historical facts. You see, the issue atheists appear to have is philosophical, not factual. Christians don't have enough faith to believe that all the New Testament writers were deceived, since the evidence contradicts such a belief. So now, let's be like the Lieutenant Columbo or Detective Friday. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. Let's get to the facts. By investigating the resurrection involves doing good history, again, by explaining these key pieces. Now, these key pieces are based on the acronym FACTS. FACTS. Fatal cross is the first one. Jesus actually died on a cross. This contrasts the swoon theory that we just talked about, that Jesus would somehow have survived the crucifixion and was resuscitated. The biblical text is very clear, and historical investigation and modern medical science demonstrate that Jesus died. There is a Journal of American Medicine article that was written around in the 1980s that talks about the physical beating that Jesus took for up until the point from the Garden of Gethsemane. It's a Garden of Gethsemane with the hematidrosis of the sweat drops of blood, and then also the whippings and the beatings, and then ultimately the nails in the wrist between the radius and the ulna and the pocket there going up the radial nerve, and then in the feet. And then all of that. And it talks about the blunt trauma that Jesus took in that paper. So it is a historical fact that Jesus died on a historical cross. And also, there was an abandoned tomb. That's A. Most scholars grant that Jesus was buried in a borrowed tomb that was later found empty. It was first explained by inventing the story of the disciples stealing the body. And, of course, we talked about that. And, of course, you can read about that conspiracy in Matthew 28, verse 13. Let me just give you a little bit of the details. You know, the body had, Jesus had already been risen. The guards at the tomb were already in trouble because their life wasn't worth a plug nickel if Jesus got away before crucifixion, let alone after his resurrection. They were given a sum of money to keep them quiet and keep them out of trouble should anything come to the Jewish priest's ears as far as it was basically hush money. And it's actually a conspiracy that is recorded for us in Scripture in Matthew 28. You can check that out. So we have a fatal cross, and we have the abandoned tomb. C, we talk about the conversion of the disciples. And as I mentioned to you earlier, that the disciples didn't believe until after the resurrection. You know, I believe it was Thomas who said, after Jesus said, we're going up to Jerusalem, Thomas said, let's go up there and die with him. So he was rather cynical. And of course, it took him 8 days after the resurrection for him to come to believe. But the conversion of the disciples, Jesus' disciples went from cowering away in a locked room in John chapter 20, verse 19, to turning the world upside down in Acts chapter 17 and verse 6. History shows that all but one disciple died for proclaiming Christ. And people may die every day for what they believe is true, but no one willingly dies for something they know to be false. They were willing to die because they knew Jesus had risen from the dead, because they saw Jesus risen from the dead. So we have a fatal cross, an abandoned tomb, we have the conversion of the disciples, and then T, we have the transformation of James. James is the half-brother of Jesus. And according to Paul, James was an eyewitness of the risen Jesus, as were the apostles more than 500 others. You can read about that in 1 Corinthians 15, verses 3 through 8. But after the resurrection, he transformed from skeptical, Mark chapter 3, verse 21, and John 7, 5, to the leader of the early church and also a martyr. He was the leader of the early church. We see that in Acts chapter 15 and also Galatians 2, 9. And then we talk, and you can read about his martyrdom in Eusebius's annals, Eusebius's works as well. So we have a fatal cross, abandoned tomb. We have the conversion of the disciples and the transformation of James. Lastly, we have the conversion of Saul, who became Paul. Saul, in modern-day context, was basically a terrorist to Christians back in the day. He was zealous. He was a zealous persecutor of the church, and he became Paul the Apostle after encountering the risen Jesus. Through his encounter, and though his encounter was not a pre-ascension encounter like the others. Now, mind you, Jesus had already risen. He went and he walked among the disciples for 40 days, 40 nights, and then he ascended into heaven. 10 days later, you had Pentecost and the birth of the church, and then you have the conversion of Saul. So his encounter was not pre-ascension, it was after the ascension. But he too died for his proclamation under the hatchet of Nero. Like James, something major had to happen in his life in order to cause such drastic change that ultimately resulted in the physical suffering and death of his life. He must have been willing to die for something that he knew to be true. So an actual resurrection of Jesus best accounts for all the puzzle pieces without forcing them to fit. Here they are again. You have F for fatal cross, A, an abandoned tomb, C, conversion of disciples, T, transformation of James, and S, Saul became Paul. Other theories simply leave some pieces out, and they're basically ad hoc or unnecessarily rule out the possibility of miracles. Thus, Jesus' claim to divinity was miraculously confirmed, providing reason to trust his claims. So what is the takeaway on this? Well, the takeaway is this. Since we know that God exists, we also know that miracles are possible. Examining these five lines of fatal cross, abandoned tomb, conversion of disciples, transformation of James, and Saul becoming Paul, these five lines of evidence that even the most critical scholars, believe this. And they use this method, we can see that the resurrection best accounts for all the pieces of the puzzle without forcing them to fit, and we did not make them fit, and we answered the objections about possibilities of, you know, whether or not they were hallucinating or they stole the body or whatever. But we can honestly say that Jesus' claims of divinity were miraculously validated by his resurrection. Thank you for listening to the Let's Get Real podcast with Rob Lundberg. If you have any questions, please email your questions to roblundberg315@gmail.com. Please subscribe to this podcast and share it with others, as we would love to be able to help equip you and them. And that way you can keep up with us as far as our ministry is concerned and keep up with getting the equipping information that you need to be able to strengthen your faith and equip others. That's what we want you to do. We want you to take this information, share it with others so that you can be a part of equipping them and equipping your family. You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about while I've been job hunting is the fact that God is not caught by surprise by our situation. If you would pray for us, as I mentioned to you 2 weeks ago, and last week it was definitive, I think I mentioned it last show, that I am now looking for a job, and we're actually seeking God's direction as far as where he would have us to go at our age and as far as what we're gifted at and where we're heading. So if you would just keep us in your prayers on that, and also if you have any questions, email your questions to roblundberg315@gmail.com. We would love to interact with you and help you get those questions answered. Also, it might give us some ideas for a future podcast, which is something that we also would like you to do. If you have any questions or you have any ideas for subject matter, we're always open to hearing those answers. Of course, you know, we usually keep it within the scope of less than a half an hour, but if sometimes we have to do that. I may be moving this as well. I may have an audio podcast, and we may have a video podcast eventually. Once we do that, we'll definitely let you know, and we'll have that on a playlist and all on my YouTube channel. You can go to our YouTube channel as well. I'll have that link for you as well in the descriptor, so in case you want to go to that as well. So thank you for listening. We'll be back with you next week, and as you go out this week, as you go out this weekend, as you go out through wherever God brings you, and you run into somebody to talk to, remember that evangelism is like gardening, like the parable of the soils. And if you're doing and planting seeds and watering for others who have already planted, and just remember that God gives the increase. But more importantly, your mission and my mission in life is to go out and give them heaven. So that's my war cry for you. Go out and give them heaven, and we will be back with you next week. Lord bless.